Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text Number 33. Asogunam mayer bhaver Bhutta sukshmendri atmabhi Svanirmitteshu nivishishna Svanirmitteshu nirvishto Bhunkte bhukteshu dhagyanam Asoganam maye bhava Bhuta sukshmendri atmabhi Svanirmiteshu nirvishta Bhunkte bhukteshu dhagyanam Asogna mayer bhave Bhuta sukshmendri atmabhi Aso that Paramatma Gunamaya influenced by the modes of nature Bhavai, naturally. Bhutta, created. Sukshma, subtle. Indriya, senses. Atmabhi, by the living beings. Svanirmiteshu, in his own creation. Nirvishta, entering. Abhunkte causes to enjoy. Abhuteshu in the living entities. Atatgunan those modes of nature. Translation. The super soul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of mature nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. Translation responsibly. The super soul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. Purport. There are 8,400,000 species of living beings, beginning from the highest intellectual being, Brahma, down to the insignificant ant, and all of them are enjoying the material world according to the desires of the subtle mind and gross material body. The gross material body is based on the conditions of the subtle mind, and the senses are created according to the desire of the living being. The Lord, as Paramatma, helps the living being to get material happiness because the living being is helpless in all respects in obtaining what he desires. He proposes and the Lord disposes. In another sense, the living beings are part and parcels of the Lord. They are therefore one with the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, the living beings in all varieties of bodies have been claimed by the Lord as his sons. The sufferings and enjoyments of the sons are indirectly the sufferings and enjoyments of the father. Still, the father is not in any way affected directly by the suffering and enjoyment of the sons. He is so kind that he constantly remains with the living being as Paramatma and always tries to convert the living being towards real happiness. The super soul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. So these verses here in the Srimad Bhagavatam are describing the glories of the Purusha avatars who act as the super soul within the material universe, and as far as the creation, maintenance and destruction of the universe is concerned. And we'll see in the next chapter we get a little bit more of the description of the three different Purusha avatars. Here it is describing the principles of the activities as the super soul. In previous verses we have seen that the Lord created the material substance, expands himself into it, and yet he always remains in the transcendental position. So here, although the Lord is described as entering within the material energy and remaining transcendental, there's a difference between the Supreme Lord's position and that of the ordinary jiva. So, of course, this is one of the beauties of reading Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam and his purports, that Sukadeva Goswami, repeating the Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Vyasadeva, they show us at every step the distinctions between ourself and the Supreme Self or the Super Soul. This is something which is not understood very easily by many people. Practically, I was talking yesterday, we were at Krishna Fest, and we were talking about the Vedas, and one, because we sort of introduced the subject of the Vedas, and someone, you know, so a lot of these people were very new to the subject to some degree or another, and so one of them asked me, so can you get information on the Vedas? Is it available? And I, you know, thought about it. I thought, yes, you know, there are books, you know, a lot of the different, especially some of the universities and what have you in India, they have some of the, you know, original texts and they keep them, and then they, you know, eventually get put into books, and so I was saying, yes, you can get the books. And there's one Indian man next to me, he said, you can, on Wikipedia, I think it is, he said, they're all there. And and I thought, oh, gee, you know, that's... So then they both got the sense that, oh yes, you know, if you want to know the Vedas, you just look on Wikipedia, you can study the Vedas. I thought to myself, that's not how it works. And then the boy said something, and the person to my left said that, is it, you know, the Vedas, he said, they're all there, but they're all different understandings. He said, you know, you can read any of the Vedas in multiple different ways, because everyone has their own interpretation. Is it the Vedas are like that, that you just look at it and you give your interpretation, and you know, everyone has their own different interpretation. They're written in such a way that you can read anything into it. That was his, you know. And I said, no, that's not correct. That's not correct. But that's the way Vedic knowledge is understood. The proper meaning of the Vedic knowledge is always missed. And usually, 99% of the time, people read the Vedas and they will fail to understand the distinction between the super soul or the supreme lord and the jiva or the individual soul. They fail to see that distinction. So I explained to him, and the person on my right, he said, yes, it's, you know, you can, because knowledge is, you know, according to our experience, therefore we get different understandings of knowledge. So because of our so many different varieties of experience, we understand something in so many different varieties of ways. And I said, no, that's not exactly true. That if we say that 2 + 2 = 4, that truth must always remain the same. But having realized that 2 + 2 = 4 and the other aspects of mathematics, a mathematician can apply that in a great variety of ways and experience so many different applications of that. So yes, there's experience of applying that truth in an unlimited variety of ways, but 2 + 2 always remains 4. That never changes. So yes, you know, there's a variety of experience, but that doesn't change the truth. And I said the Vedas are exactly the same, that there is an essential truth and it never changes. It's not that you can interpret 2 + 2, you know, that, yeah, I interpret 2 + 2 = 5. You know, I think 2 + 2 = 4. Just, you know, I got a feeling, you know, my intuition is telling me it's more like 5, maybe even 5.5, like that. You know, so, you know, I've travelled a bit and I just sort of got it, you know. It's not like that. It doesn't matter what your feelings are, what your experiences are, 2 + 2 always remains 4. So Vedic knowledge is like that. It actually cannot be interpreted in any other way except its exact meaning. But if it's understood, the application of that knowledge, you can experience that in an unlimited variety of ways, definitely. And by practical application of that knowledge, you get unlimited different realizations. Here, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the essential truths of the Vedas is that there is a difference between the super soul or the supreme lord and the individual soul. There are many, many differences. Now, one of the differences being pointed out in this section is that although the super soul, first of all, one of the differences is that the super soul creates the material world and then enters within it. And then the second difference is that entering in the universe, the material creation, that super soul remains the controller of that material creation and therefore never bewildered by its illusory nature. The super soul remains the controller of the illusory nature of the material energy, always controlling that illusion to which bewilders, but never under the control of that illusory material nature, and therefore becoming bewildered. So that is the difference. The super soul always remains in full knowledge and in full control of the material energy, even though the super soul has entered within the material energy. Now, let us compare that with our position and see whether we are the super soul. That we're also in the material energy, but in general, we spend our entire life in the illusion of thinking we are the material body. So deeply in that illusion that even after, you know, constant instruction, and even we understand, we're so conditioned by that illusion, which means we're controlled by that illusion, that even when some understanding comes, we struggle to free ourselves from that illusory understanding that I am this material body. And therefore, just like many of us have plans of what we're going to do today or this week, next week, this year, or with our lives, and in most cases those plans are based upon how we're going to satisfy the needs of the body. But a person who is transcendentally situated, not under illusion, understanding, well, I'm not the body. Why should I spend my entire life catering to the needs of the body? I'm not the body, I'm the soul within. So therefore I'll cater to the spiritual needs of the soul, because that's who I am. Therefore, the spiritual needs of the soul is actually, I'm in an incompatible situation in the material world. The material world is a place of birth and death. It's not compatible with an eternal, fully conscious, blissful soul. Therefore, let me get out of the material world, go back to the spiritual environment. So I'll spend my life, you know, every day of my life like that. So that's a person who's risen out of the illusion. But if we're not doing that, and we're making plans to, you know, I'll make a nice, happy home, and I'll make this arrangement, and I'll have this income and this education and so many different things, and in this way I'll make this wonderful situation here, like that. If we're doing that, if that's the main focus of our life, then we're under the illusion of the bodily platform of life. So therefore, we can see that because the scriptures state that there is a difference between the super soul and the individual soul, and if we compare those differences, we can see that I am definitely not the super soul. The difficulty is that we so much want to be the super soul that it doesn't take much to convince us. We all want to be recognized for having good qualities and being very talented and being very popular, being very wonderful, being very intelligent. So, if someone says, you're very smart, I would say, oh yes, oh, they reckon, yes, I am a very smart person. And it's, it doesn't take much for us, because we really want to hear that. Even animals, animals sometimes do little tricks and things, and they show, how clever they are, even, pets. And you give them a pat. Oh yes, you're a very clever dog, like this. And quite often people say, oh, I just got a new dog, he's really smart. And I always say to them, if he's so smart, how did he become a dog? You've got to be, how did he end up in that dog's body? That's not very intelligent, I said, for a dog, okay, he's clever, but he's pretty dumb, really. So, similarly, sometimes, we like to think we're very, very clever, but we've got to think, well, how did I end up and this material body again in material existence, you know, it's a pretty dumb thing to do somehow or another. But we like to get the little pat on the back that, you know, oh yes, you're very, very smart. So, but, you know, we like to actually think that we're the super soul. We like to think that we are, you know, all-powerful enjoyer, that, you know, the nature of the super soul is that their knowledge is complete. So we like to feel, yes, my knowledge is complete. Look, there may be some tiny little things I'll get to know over the next couple of years, but by and large, I know everything. You know? And or, you know, that we're the unrestricted enjoyer. That, you know, yes, basically, you know, as far as the eye can see, that's mine for enjoying. You know, I'm getting there, gradually getting to it. So we have that mentality that, you know, that position of the super soul is ours. I remember just, you know, seeing how easy it is to fall into that trap, because that's what we want. That's really the driving desire, what got us into the material world in the beginning, our desire to be that supreme person who is literally the proprietor of everything and the enjoyer of everything, the creator of everything. It was that envy that we want that position that actually gets us into the material world. So I remember when I was a teenager, before I read devotional books, I was a little interested in philosophy, and there was, again, some philosophical books. One was written by a Dr. Brunton, so he was a Westerner, and he was giving his interpretation of Vedic knowledge. But it was the first I'd really heard of Vedic knowledge, so I didn't have anything else to compare with it. And to me, you know, when someone, the danger is when someone says, oh, here is Vedic knowledge, and it's the first you hear of it, then you just accept, oh, that's what Vedic knowledge is. You just accept, you know, someone's got the title Dr. Brunton. Oh, well, if he's a doctor, he must know what he's talking about. So Dr. Brunton is, you know, got this book on the Vedas. So you assume that someone like that in that position wouldn't write a book if they didn't know what they were talking about. But he did describe about the over-self, as he called it, and the super-self, and he described that the Vedas say that we are one with the over-self or the super-self. So I just, you know, as a young teenager, and as I said, that original desire that gets us into the material world, I thought, yes, that's what I wanted to hear. That's what I've always wanted to hear. And by meditation and what have you, I can remember that I am that super soul. So I actually used to do a lot of, I didn't really know what austerities were, you know, that you've got to perform austerities and penances, I guess. So I just did what I thought was austerities and penances. I used to, I'd wake up in the wee hours of the morning, maybe 1 or 2 o'clock, and I just, because I used to live on the peninsula, and I'd go for a walk, you know, miles, maybe 10 miles or something like that. And I used to walk along the beach, and I'd find a cave somewhere. And like Mount Martha, you have all these nice little hidden caves, and I'd climb up and I'd have my sleeping bag and I'd hop into the cave, and then I'd sort of meditate how I am one with the super soul, and you know, like this. And I used to have some incredible sort of unusual experiences in that sort of sleep. You know, there were some quite mystical things used to happen. Now, when I'd wake up, of course, I'd look out and there's a beautiful ocean just straight in front of me. It's very unusual. you would think, because on some of these nights, the winter nights and what have you, because the idea, of course, is you perform austerities, which meant that you try to become free from the bodily conception of life. So, despite the fact that it was very, very cold, very, very wet, very windy, you try to, you know, get off the bodily platform and understand that you're, in this case, the super soulless. So, the surprising thing is, once you get in those little caves, even though it's freezing and rain, you're perfectly warm. There are some, you know, caves offer some unusual. I never understood it, but it was almost like you're in a room with a heater on, and you know, it was just unusual. So I can understand how the yogis, even in their little caves in the Himalayas, it's actually, you know, they can be quite cozy. But they've got a certain way of keeping heat in there. It must come up through the grounds, I don't know. Anyway, one day while I was in one of those, I was sleeping, and I had this sort of a dream, sort of unusual experience where I dreamt I was sitting on the beach in a bathtub having a shower. So it was a beautiful sunny day. So I was sitting on the beach in a bathtub, and there's no piping or anything, but the water is coming out of the shower, and I'm sitting there, and as I'm looking out over the beach, and as I'm looking over the beach, the sun went down and set on the horizon, and I thought to myself, gee, I'm having such a good time, you know, I wish the sun could go back up in the sky. So in my dream, the sun went back up in the sky. I thought, gee, that was pretty good. And then, you know, so I stayed there in this bathtub, and then gradually, you know, the sun went down again. And I thought, oh, I'm going to make the sun go up in the sky again. So I made the sun go up in the sky. I did. So I did that a few times and just enjoyed this little, you know, time on the beach. And just the sun was pretty much at my command. So you can imagine when I woke up, I'm reading this book by Dr. Brunton. I've just had this dream that, you know, I've made the sun go up and down in the sky. I thought I'd made it. I thought, yeah, this is, you know, it's a fact. I am going to become the super soul. I did, you know. I thought, I'm not far off it. Of course, Krishna, being very kind as he is, managed to kick the hell out of me in several different ways throughout the course of my teenage years, and I gradually realized that I had much less control, you know, as a super soul as what I would have liked to have had. So Krishna managed to kick a lot of sense into me the hard way, just like Lord Nityananda. That's Lord Nityananda's mercy. Lord Nityananda once came across a Buddhist who was meditating upon the void, and so he kicked him in the head. You know, where's your void? My lotus foot is right here. You know. So I had similar experiences like that, gradually coming back to my senses. There's no way that I am God or the super soul. Although these things can, you know, happen only in the hallucination of your dreams. So, but, you know, the point is that it's very easy for the general interpretation of the Vedas is that people would not make the distinction between the super soul and the individual soul, and people believe that they can interpret the Vedas in any particular way they like, and that's all correct. But as we learn here, there is, you know, that truth, that essential fact that there is a difference between us, the living entity who is controlled very, very strongly by the illusory energy, fully controlled by it, and the super soul who is the controller, even though the super soul enters within the material energy, always remains the controller, never under the illusion of the material existence. That difference is there. Now, the super soul, as described in this verse, enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature, and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. So we are in effect controlled by the Lord through his material energy. The spirit soul, seeing the various creations of the material world, with this desire to be the unrestricted enjoyer of material existence and the unrestricted controller of material existence, the spirit soul sees the creations of the material world and desires with their mind to enjoy them. So we see how this is the creation of the super soul, that as we go through this world, it is so perfectly made by the super soul that you get completely bewildered, you get completely absorbed in it. It's like, sometimes someone makes a movie, and some people, they can make, a movie, really well, and when you watch that movie, you're just like, you're there, you're there on that battlefield, and you're crying when, the little yellow dog died, and, you're just right there in it, and when Bambi's mother dies, it's like, oh my God, You're there. You just get so absorbed in it. Sometimes you're watching a movie and it's like a B grade, C grade, and the actors are not very good, and you think, oh, you can't quite get in, it's like, it's just a movie, you're watching a movie. But sometimes they're so well done that you sort of feel like you're, there within the characters, you become absorbed in it like that. So this creation is like that. It's a really first class produced movie, it's just, you get so absorbed in it, in the characters and, like that. Sometimes I've had the experience when flying out of especially as a brahmachari, I used to travel a lot more as a devotee, and you'd fly out of one state and you'd go and live in another state for a couple of years, and then you'd fly out of that state and you'd go and live in another state. And I always remember the feeling that when you're flying over the a new place where you're going to live, and you look down and you see all the people like little ants, as you're coming down in the aeroplane, and you think, and you look down and you think, gee, from my perspective now, I'm just completely detached from anything that's happening down there. I'm not absorbed in any of it. But they're running around completely absorbed in what they're doing, as the all in all, what they're doing. In the same way that when we walk past an ant colony, you never really get absorbed. You don't stop and think, oh, there's so-and-so's had another couple of hundred babies, or and they've moved out into their own little nest, oh, that's nice by the little frog pond over there. You don't get absorbed, you're just completely detached. But of course then what happens when the plane comes down and you end up in that city, and gradually you know, you become completely absorbed in everything. So, you know, material existence is like that, that we just gradually become more and more absorbed by the mind. It's so well created. You can't help but get dragged into it like that until you're fully associating with the goings on your own body, the goings on around your own body. You're just completely absorbed in that. That's it, like that. And the fact that you have nothing to do with that material body, and therefore anything related to it or anything happening to it just completely disappears. And once again, you're just completely absorbed. So through the mind, when we become, the Lord creates this material creation in such a way, it is so expert that people become 100% absorbed. Life after life after life after life. Such a wonderful creation. So, you know, you don't ever see the scenes, you know, and where, you know, and hang on. This is not real. You know, you're always just completely, more and more, in fact, it's so you become more and more illusion. Life after life after life. You know, you never see, this is all illusion like this. You don't see like that. It's just, it's so well done. So well done. So, the mind becomes absorbed, and therefore the Lord, as it describes here, that the super soul enters in the bodies of created beings who are influenced by the motor mature nature, so they become influenced. The Lord is with the modes of material nature. He's created all the different varieties of material existence. We become influenced by that, and mind becomes absorbed in it, and then that causes us to try to enjoy the things of this material world. And of course, with the result also that we also suffer the miseries of material existence. So, this is something that we've been discussing a little bit in the Bhakti Vaibhava class about the nature of suffering. That does the spirit soul, how is it, you know, the question is asked, how is it the spirit soul who is Satchitananda, so the soul is of the same quality as the super soul. They're both sat, eternal. They're both chit, they're both conscious and knowledgeable. And they're both ananda, blissful by nature. Completely pure, eternally pure. And have no material qualities. The difference is, of course, is that the super soul is all powerful and can create the material world and can control it. Whereas we are the tiny little spirit soul, a particle of the energy of the super soul, the conscious energy. And we are so tiny that we're very easily controlled by the other energy of the super soul, the material energy. But we have that eternally pure nature. How is it, Vidura asked this question in Maitreya, that eternal spirit soul has the quality of lamenting and suffering and being in a miserable condition, because the soul is eternally pure and eternally free from material qualities. So then material qualities, how is it that the soul has those material qualities, can take them on? And of course the answer is given that if we look at the reflection of the moon within the water, it appears that the moon is shimmering. So it appears that the moon has the qualities where it is shimmering. But actually we know that the moon doesn't shimmer. But because we're seeing the reflection of the moon in the water is shimmering, it appears that the moon has those qualities, but it's actually the water that has those qualities. So in the same way, the spirit soul, when seen through the material energy, it appears to have material qualities, but actually the soul never has those qualities of suffering or misery, they are the material qualities, but the soul, seen through the material energy, appears to have those qualities. But the soul actually does not suffer. And yet, when the mind associates itself as being part of the material energy and an enjoyer of the material energy, the person does suffer because they're associating themselves with the material qualities. So, actually they're not suffering, but because there's so much associating with the material body, they suffer. Then actually the soul doesn't suffer, so their suffering is apparent. But for when a person's suffering, as we know, when a person suffers in this material body, that suffering is very, very real to the conditioned soul. We were discussing this from all different angles of vision. One of the examples Prabhupada gives to illustrate this is that he describes that one of his friends who is a doctor is going to operate upon a very small child, like a baby who had a boil on its leg, and which had to be sort of cut, and they released the poison in there and what have you. So Srila Prabhupada said, he prepared, and he said, are you going to use, it may have even been his child, I think, Prabhupada's child, he said, are you going to use some anesthetic or something to take away the pain? He said, there's no need, because their consciousness is not there. Because the child is so young, it's not going to focus attention on there, it won't feel any pain. And so, as he cut the leg, the child had no reaction at all. No reaction. But if you do that to a 5-year-old child, their their attention is fully focused on that, and they'll scream with pain. So, that's focus of the mind of identifying itself as the material body. In that way, the Lord has caused us to enjoy or suffer. Because we want to enjoy the material energy, so he's created it in such a way that it really looks enjoyable. And therefore our mind focuses upon it, and we really feel, yes, I'm actually, acting in such a way that I'm enjoying the material energy. And of course, when the suffering comes, and now I'm suffering. I might ask, does anyone here have similar experiences that they might want to share about experiences where by your mind not being focused on the body, that somehow or another you've transcended what should be a position of pain or suffering? Has anyone here got some experiences like that?
I'm coming to you. When you are operating on a small child, an infant inside, and you're inside the abscess or whatever, the child is not suffering, but the mother is suffering.
that's a good point. Yeah, she's feeling the pain. Yeah, because her mind is focused. Yeah. That's a good point. Rasa, you going to say something?
Many decades of my life, I was a chronic and severe asthmatic to the point where several times in my teenage years I nearly left my body. At the same time, I was brought up as a Catholic and had a strong spiritual education. So until I actually discovered the breathing techniques to free me, focus, to free me from that suffering, it was that prayer and meditation got me through those periods of severe illness.
So that actually made a very distinct, removal of suffering, separation from the suffering, just through application of our, focus, either focusing on it or taking our focus away to something more positive. Anyone else? Yeah?
Yeah, concentration, if you are working somewhere and you are concentrating in a factory or something, if you get hurt, you won't be feeling that one until when you finish the job and get out of that.
Yeah.
Most of the people, everyday life it happens.
Yes.
Because our concentration is in different.
Yes.
Our focus is different.
Yeah.
So whatever it happens to our body, we are not feeling the pain until when we finish the job and then we come out. Then you can see where we got
hurt,
where the whole
thing got hurt.
That is everyday life.
That's a fact, Actually, I experienced that here at the temple. I come to the temple in the morning and, I just sort of go through the day. When I go home and I sit down, I think, my back, my neck. But during the day, you just focused on what you're doing, so you don't know. But that's a fact. People in war as well. People in war situations, the people have had, severe damage to their body, but they've seen, a friend lying, and they'll pick them up, carry them, take them away, and they put them down, and then they look at themselves and they think, there's a quarter of my body's disappeared, but they don't notice because they're focused on something else.
As you also said, during war, when somebody drops off the head, head is one of still the body fighting.
Yes, so the body is there, running around. That's an interesting example.
The Kuru Chakra and the Chakra is such a strong spirit that even the heads were cut off, the body is still fighting.
The focus was still there, right? In the body. The body is. It reminds me of a story. I don't know what it's got to do with the philosophy. I'll tell you the story anyway. But on that same point, that when I was young, probably about five, my brother was six, my father took a rooster out in the backyard, and of course, he was going to chop its head off, because it was. And he chopped its head off, and it would. My brother was in front of it, and the rooster started running around the yard after its head was chopped off, maybe about 15 times. But I've got this, my brother was in front of it, so it was just this headless rooster chasing my brother around the yard. My brother's screaming, this rooster chasing. But somehow or another, the focus is there. I think that's another whole class, that one. Try and understand that. But anyone else like to share some? But anyway, you get the idea there that the material energy is so well created, it does draw our focus in, and we actually try to enjoy, and of course we become so absorbed in that. We also identify with the enjoyment and the suffering, even though in actuality the soul is doing nothing and remains literally without material qualities of lamentation or jubilation, material lamentation or jubilation. An example that happened to me when I was about seven, sort of again shows the effects of the focus of the mind. When I went to sleep one night, I dreamt I was on a very large rocking horse. I had one leg standing, so I wasn't sitting on it, I was sort of standing on it, but as it was going like this, I got butterflies in my stomach, and when I woke up I still had the butterflies in my stomach, and I thought, that's interesting how I've actually got butterflies in my stomach, as if I was on, like when you're on a swing or something, but I was just dreaming. I was thinking, that's quite amazing how I literally got the physical reaction. And I thought to myself, you know, I'd like to go back to sleep and do it again, you know, because it was good. But when I went back to sleep, instead of finding myself on a rocking horse, I found myself at the top of a cliff. And I looked down, you know, it was like, you ever seen the road runner and the coyote? Yeah, it's like those cliffs. Yeah. It was like that. I mean, this was just hundreds and hundreds of feet high, and it was just a sheer drop, straight down like that. I looked over the edge in my dream and I thought, you wouldn't want to fall down there. And as I said it, I fell. You know, and I'm just racing down to the ground, and you know, my body starts sweating like anything. I'm screaming. I'm, you know, I can feel the wind pulling back my face like this. You know, I feel it. And they say, I've heard that when you're actually falling to earth, it appears that the earth is rushing up towards you. That's it. And that's what it was like. And you know, as I was coming down, I thought, oh, this is it. This is it. I'm going to die. I've fallen off a cliff. And just before I hit the ground, I woke up. But when I woke up, I was sweating from head to toe, absolutely drenched in sweat, you know, like physically. And I thought, wow, you know, that's just amazing how you can get such a physical reaction from a dream, you know. So, but it scared the hell out of me, absolutely scared the hell out of me. But over a couple of days, I remember something that my brother had said to me, because there had some James Bond movie come out, and he said, you can only die twice, once in real life and once in your dreams. And I thought about this after this dream, and I thought, gee, if I had to hit the ground, because I had such a physical reaction, I could have also died. Because my brother said, you know, you can die in your dreams. And then I thought about it, I thought, can you die in your dreams? Because you're just dreaming, you know. And so a couple of days later, I thought, I'll go back to sleep and see if I can get back on that cliff. No, it's a fact. So I went back to sleep, and lo and behold, there I was on top of this cliff. I looked down, I thought, you know, I'm going to try and see if I can hit the ground. Because I didn't think I would die. And over I went, flying down, you know, absolutely again, you know, feeling my face pulling back and terrified, absolutely terrified. And just before I hit the ground, I woke up. And again, when I woke up, absolutely covered in sweat. And I thought, damn, I didn't hit the ground. Yeah. So I thought, I've got to do it again. So the same night, literally, I went straight back to sleep, and I found myself again on the same cliff. And I thought to myself, this time I'm going to hit the ground. So, you know, jumped over, flying down, still as terrified as anything, you know, absolutely screaming all the way down. But then, just as I got to hit the ground, I rolled over on my back and hit the ground on my back. And I bounced up into the sky about 300 yards and then bounced and bounced and bounced. And on the last one, I woke up and I was laughing my head off. And I thought, aha, you don't die in your dreams like that. You know. But the difference was that I gradually got to understand that I was dreaming. So, you know, the focus originally was that you know, in the first time I actually fell off the cliff, I actually thought that I was, you know, doing that. But as I gradually did it purposely, I thought, here I am in my dream, I'm going to jump off this cliff. So the focus of the mind was somewhat different. And therefore, you know, in the same way that we think, you know, we can be, I am this body, and I'm suffering like anything. And then gradually, as we become a little Krishna conscious, we think, I'm in this body, but I know that I'm different from the body. So your focus can pull back like that. So, you know, it's an example how shifting the focus of your mind from being absorbed in the material body, or even while you're in the material body, to pull your mind back from that focus and to understand, I am a spirit soul completely different from that material body, and in actuality the suffering of material existence is not the same for a devotee the more Krishna conscious they become. Now, here in this, one thing that we can take from this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that if we can understand the power and the potency and the expertise of the Supersoul in creating the material world in such a wonderful way that we become so absorbed that we really think that we're part of material existence and we really suffer and enjoy, if we take that same Supreme Personality of Godhead and ask Him, you please now, using your expertise, your power, and you help me come back to the state of the pure spirit soul where I'm not absorbed in your material energy under illusion, you imagine how powerful that Supreme Being is in giving us that transcendental position. Now, of course, the yogis, they try to come to that position by themselves, by their own, penances and austerities and mystic practices and what have you. But a devotee, they understand the Supersoul, Paramatma, is so powerful. Seeing what he's done with the material world and how he can bewilder everyone, that if that supreme powerful person would help me to get out of material existence, it'd be so easy. So easy. So that is the the devotees, we simply chant the various names of that Supreme Lord. And of course we understand that that Supreme Lord, whether he be Mahavishnu or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu or Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, is non-different from Krishna. We know that because that was Brahma's realization at the very beginning of creation. When Lord Brahma appeared on the lotus stem, and after his meditation, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu was revealed to him, he also understood by the grace of Krishna, who revealed his form, that Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is an expansion or non-different from Lord Sri Krishna. And therefore you see in the Brahma Samhita that Brahma offers those prayers. So the Purusha avatars, the Supersoul, they are an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Lord Sri Krishna. So we can barely understand the unlimited potency of Lord Sri Krishna, who maintains the whole material existence just by an expansion of himself, while he remains completely aloof, enjoying another incredible manifestation of the spiritual realm. If that person would help us to become situated, free from illusion, how easy that would be, because he's so powerful. So therefore that's the process that we take, and we just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And just by that simple process of chanting Hare Krishna, and the Supreme Lord, he hears his chanting and he thinks, ah, you finally understood. You're never going to do it by yourself. And I'm so pleased you've understood and, come to me to help, that the Supreme Lord is so kind. In fact, Krishna, as the Supersoul, accompanies us for millions and millions and millions and millions of lifetimes, just waiting, waiting, waiting. And then after millions and millions of births, we finally say, yes, let me turn back to my friend. And that, he becomes so pleased. We have no idea the transcendental bliss of the Supreme Lord when he hears us chanting Hare Krishna like that. So if we do that, it's very, very powerful. And he just, as it says, Nam Nama Karivahu Dharani Sadhu Shaptis, the Lord has invested all his transcendental qualities and potencies and energies within the holy name. So when we take shelter of the holy name, it is so powerful to free us from the suffering of a material existence, and also ultimately to transform us back to the spiritual world. So anyone has any comments or questions?
Yeah. One more comment to make. Thank you for a very nice class. When you said that from the ground you jumped about 300 yards, I was thinking, because Radha Vallabha provided you a trampoline. So you jumped.
I bounced like a rubber ball. Yeah. It was just each time, just a little lower like that.
Yeah.
But you know, the interesting thing there is that the super soul, quite often people have different experiences in their life which are somewhat mystical or magical. But usually they miss the real point. You know, for instance, one time my daughter had this dream, and when she woke up, she understood where one earring had been gone. So she felt really ecstatic. Oh, I found the other earring because I dreamt it and I knew where it was. And when I woke up, I went there and got it. I thought, that's not the treasure. You know, that's not the, you know... what's actually happened there is that the super soul has give you a little push and said, here I am. No? I'm here. That's the real experience that you're supposed to take from that, that without the presence of the super soul, how is it possible that these things happen? So many people have these different mystical experiences and so many things that happen, but they're so absorbed in material existence that their friend is constantly pushing and say, here I am. Did you not see what I just did? How did that happen if I wasn't here? Like, he's constantly showing. But we're so absorbed in the material existence that we just, I can't see anything. So, you know, these, for a devotee, of course, as they become Krishna conscious, you see, you know, the gopis, they manifest the topmost level of Krishna consciousness, that, you know, within, without, at every single moment, they were fully aware of Krishna. Everything had a relationship with Krishna. And as the devotee becomes more Krishna conscious, they see more and more that everything is completely related to the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul is always present. For a devotee, they can't see anything that's not connected. That is the progression of Krishna consciousness. And to the degree that we can't see the presence of the super soul or Krishna, to that degree we're completely bewildered, just too absorbed in material existence. You were going to say someone? Yeah.
You were discussing about not identifying with the body.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada is the greatest example. Like,
yes.
Even he was at the passing away stage. Still, the purports, the wonderful purports of Bhagavatam was coming up.
That's right.
It's oblivious to the fact that he's the body.
Yes.
That's his final instruction.
That's right.
So the body didn't do that for him. It was just.
Still perform the same activities as if it was another day. You know, he's on the last, couple of breaths about to leave his body. The Srila Prabhupada had just perform the same activities as he'd done every day, translate the Bhagavatam, teach his disciples, pray to Krishna. And that's the example, that if we practice in this lifetime, at the time of death, you know, you just become, your mind is not in death, your mind is in eternality, and you go to the spiritual world. Any? Jai, all good, Srila Prabhupada.
Good.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Our body is getting this pain and suffering.
Yeah.